I don't know, which is a bigger miracle, Trump or the Cubs winning the World Series? Which one? Well, we got our play this week, Saturday, Sunday. Dress rehearsal tomorrow night, so this is a good time of year for us. Okay, Ezra chapter 8. I'm not going to read the first 20 verses because you'll be asleep by the time I get done. Okay, and let's go and pray. Lord, I thank you for your words. I do pray you'd help us to understand your words. Help us to understand what it was about Ezra that you used his name on this book. And I pray you'd help us to see his sincerity and his desire to please you as far as what's written and recorded for us to read. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Ezra's got 10 chapters. We've been going through it, not verse by verse, especially this part. Okay, but he was instrumental in bringing a great revival to Israel. Okay, probably the greatest citywide revival was Jonah's, okay, where it was a city, Babylon, or Nineveh, I'm sorry, Nineveh. And he was mad about it. Different kind of a revival. And probably the next greatest one was with Ezra because all of the captives and everybody got right. And it started off with divorce decrees in chapter 9 and 10. Unusual revival. Okay, and then Josiah had a great revival. Okay, now where's America on that? I don't know. This country's is... The churches are a mess as far as things go. And I don't know what the Lord's got in store for our country, but I'd say we need to pray for mercy. Okay, and it seems like he's granted a little bit of mercy just by not letting Queen Hillary get in charge. But we'll see. Okay, we got went through chapter 7 last week. And chapter 7, verse 6 and 10 shows the general attitude of Ezra, and this is an attitude that the Lord would want us to have. It says in verse 10, Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. Okay, in chapter 8, the same gentleman, the same fella, is guiding people in a confession or revival to the Lord, and he is leading by example. So if we would drop down to 21, all those names that are recorded are the fellow laborers that helped Ezra. Now, Paul did the same thing in Romans chapter 16. He just gave name after name after name in his gratitude towards them, and this shows us that God keeps record of the names. Okay, he keeps record of who did what, and they're going to be honored for their service for the Lord. Okay, and Ezra got his so-called name on the title of the book, but all these other men are getting rewarded in eternity. So chapter 21, he says this, "Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava that we might afflict ourselves before our God to seek of him a right way for us and for our little ones and for our substance." Okay, we might afflict ourselves. Now, the Catholic Church, of course, will throw that affliction, meaning they beat themselves with whips, or they'll crawl up a glass-ridden hill, or sharp rocks, they get to the top and they're bloody everywhere. Or they wear what's called a scapula. A scapula is a real tight necklace. It's real so tight where you really have a hard time swallowing. It's a sort of a penance thing that they do. Okay, so they take stuff like that, and they're going to say that's how we afflict ourselves for the Lord. Okay, and now, in actuality, that is an evidence of being demonized, okay, mutilating the body and everything. Now, in this context, we see that Ezra is afflicting himself by not eating. Now, that's a great affliction for a lot of folks. Okay, now, there's different motives for fasting. Fasting is something that the Bible does write about. It is something that the new Bibles will tend to remove out of the Bible. Now, everybody fasts every single day, and you break your fast in the morning. It's called breakfast. Okay, so everybody fasts in some form, in some way. It could be not doing something that you normally do. It could be abstaining from food. It could be abstaining from some pleasure that you have. It could be abstaining from a certain amount of sleep. Different types of fasting. You can have a fasting for physical reasons, for mental reasons, for spiritual reasons. Depends on your motive on those things. Okay, there's a fella named Shelton years ago that studied a lot of fasting, and another fella named Paul Bragg. Paul Bragg was, I think, was in his 80s about the time, and he went on several fasts. He would fast every season for at least 3 days, and then he'd do a 30-day fast or something like that. Paul Bragg was kind of known amongst the Hollywood people, where he would help them, you know, stay youthful and all that stuff. The fellow died when he was 94. He was surfing down in Hawaii and fell off the board and hit his head and died. Okay, and so he didn't have a wheelchair on the surfboard either. He was fasting one day, doing a 30-day fast, and he offered several college young men that he wanted to go on a 30-mile hike or a long hike. And he told the fellas that they can eat anything they want, just as long as they keep up with him, and all he's going to do is continue to fast and drink lukewarm water, or the water that he chose to drink. So they get to eat anything they want, go on this 30-mile fast, and he's the only one that finished the 30 miles. Most of them bombed out about 10 miles in. Okay, and he was making a point that in fasting, your body does get stronger in many ways. Okay, and there are many health reasons for fasting, mentally, physically, spiritually. In Ezra, it was strictly a spiritual fast. Okay, you can see that that's what they're doing. Okay, they're afflicting themselves by not eating. Okay, how much a person doesn't eat or how long they don't eat, that's something. If a person chooses to do that, I would suggest they find 2, 3, 4 books and read about it first before you do anything, and drink plenty of water, or at least do a juice fast first. You know, do that for whatever amount of time where you're actually still getting nutrition. It's just that it's not digesting. Okay, so Isaiah chapter 58, if you would, look at that, where Isaiah talked about somebody fasting. And the Lord wants us to fast for the right reason. Isaiah 58, verse 3. Motive is very important in doing this. Remember that when the young kid who had read all Harry Potter's books and, you know, did a lot of Pokemon stuff back in the day of the Lord, and he got possessed. And dad had brought the kid from one place to another, and maybe kind of like a kid I was trying to help him last night, I don't know. This kid was, nobody could help him, and then the Lord cleaned him up, and the disciples said, "How come you two can do it and we couldn't?" He said, "This kind cometh but by prayer and fasting." Now that verse removed from the New Bibles. Okay, Isaiah 58, verse 3. Okay, it says, "Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not?" Okay, so the question is, they're saying, okay, if we fast, that means God has to answer our prayer. No, he doesn't. He doesn't have to. "Wherefore have we afflicted our soul?" So affliction and fasting are put together. "And thou takest no knowledge." He just might not, depending upon our motive. "Behold, in the day of your fast, ye find pleasure and exact all your labors. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day, to make your voice to be heard on high." So these people are fasting, but they're doing it for the wrong reasons. And God's not paying attention to them. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke. Now there's proper motives in that question for the right kind of fasting. Verse 7, is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house, when thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh? Okay, so there's proper reasons for fasting. Ezra is guiding the people by example to fast for what reason? Well, he said to seek of him a right way for us. Okay, and so they're gone to a certain location, and he is concerned about the marauders that will probably attack them. So he's asking God for guidance which route we should take. Verse 22, he says this, "For I was ashamed to require of the king a band of soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy in the way. Because we had spoken unto the king, saying, The hand of our God is upon all them for good that seek him, but his power and his wrath is against all them that forsake him. So we fasted and besought our God for this, and he was entreated of us." So Ezra had an in with the political figures here, and he did not want to ask for police to be along or soldiers to be along with them, you know, a police escort, because he said, "Man, I already stuck my neck out. I told this guy that God's hand's with us, and he's in essence going to protect us. And then if I up and ask him for a police escort, you know, that would make me look like I don't have any faith, or I'm a hypocrite." So it's interesting that that's his attitude. He doesn't want to take something or require something of a public official that he doesn't need. Boy, I wish I had that attitude in our country. Okay, and so this is Ezra's mindset on this idea. Okay, several years ago, there was a bar. I don't know if it was built next to this church or what happened. Okay, but this church started praying that the tavern would burn down. And lightning struck and burned the tavern down. Okay, and the tavern owner got upset. Of course, he sued the church because they prayed that the tavern would be burned down and it got burned down. So he sued the church for destruction of property. And here they are in court, and the tavern owner had more faith in the church. The church said, "Yeah, we prayed for it, but we don't think God did it for us." And the tavern owner said, "Yeah, he did do it for you." And I forget how the judge ruled. I think the judge ruled in favor of the church. It's like, okay, you prayed for this, and then it happened, and then you don't want to give God the credit for it just because you're getting sued in court. Well, the tavern guy had more faith than they had. Okay, and so the thing is a lot of times, okay, how are we supposed to behave like in our faith in God or our trust in God and carrying a gun? Okay, you're going to go up to 5th Avenue Gary tonight, 15th Avenue down in Gary, and hold the Trump sign without a gun? You're going to do it by faith. You know, yeah, right. Okay, and so there's a balance in a lot of this stuff. Okay, where some of the martyrs of the old day, you know, if they had a weapon, a lot of times they could have protected themselves. Sometimes they chose to be martyrs. Sometimes they chose not to be. Okay, and this, of course, we know is a reason why any government entity that wants to take guns away from people is because they have intent of genocide. I mean, that's logical. Okay, and so where does a person draw a line in these things? And that's, of course, between you and God. Okay, and so I just read a story of a pastor and his wife was, I think, Philadelphia area. And a guy came out, they thought it was a shotgun, and tried to, mug them, get money from them and everything. And she whipped out her gun and pointed at the guy and said, "Drop it, drop it." He wouldn't, so she shot him in the leg. Okay, and then a guy dropped it. It wasn't a gun, but it looked like a gun. Okay, and so then a guy, I think, took off, but they eventually caught the dude. Okay, now, was she right in doing that? Of course, as far as the Bible's concerned. Absolutely. You know, and Exodus chapter 32, we have a right to protect ourselves. Okay, and so, you know, this idea, Ezra saying, okay, should we, shouldn't we? Okay, that's something the Lord has to guide you along the way. Okay, and so that's his thinking process, verse 21 to 23. Now, if you would, you see all the details going on of the gifts and everything. If we drop down, let's see, down to 31. Then we departed from the river of Ahava on the 12th day of the first month to go into Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was upon us. Now that's an Old Testament phrase, the hand of our God. For the New Testament, we, in essence, are the hand of God because we're in the body of Christ. But still, it is an Old Testament phrase. And hand of our God was upon us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and of such as lay in wait by the way. And we came to Jerusalem and abode there 3 days. So God did protect them, okay, and they got to their destination, okay, without a police escort. Okay, so now chapter 9. Now chapter 9 and 10 is the actual, chapter 9 is more or less the footwork, the behind the scenes or the in the heart issue of the revival. Chapter 10 is the outbreak of the revival of Israel at the time. This is the post-captivity people coming back from Babylon, about 46,000 people, okay, plus everybody else is around Israel. Now watch this man's attitude and reaction, Ezra, and you can see, in essence, why the Lord used him. Okay, where in verse 1 it says, "Now when these things were done, the princes came to me saying," okay, the princes, the politicians, "the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the lands, doing according to all to their abominations, even of the Canaanites and the Hittites and Perizzites, Jebusites, Ammonites, Moabites, Egyptians, and Amorites." Those are all Hamite descendants. Okay, and so this is racial bigotry in the Bible. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, the language that some people use where somebody can call somebody an MF, and that's not bad, but if you call them the N-word, that's terrible. I mean, it's just the hypocrisy in this country is just amazing. And that's why the media, I saw this clip, where Georgie Stephanopoulos, did anybody see that trip where he interviewed Trump? I tell you why the media hated him, because he pointed out their hypocrisy. And so he made a statement like, well, all of us have regrets. Even you, George, have regrets. And he says, name one. And he said, your gift to the Clinton Foundation. You talk about smack right in the face. And that is an absolute hypocrisy. And like another person was being interviewed, and they said, CNN, that means Clinton News Network. And it just kept rubbing it in her face, because that's what it was. It's the hypocrisy that's being exposed. Now, our Lord and Savior, he lived 3.5 years during his ministry. Why did they crucify a man who went around doing good like Jesus, like Peter said he did? He went around doing good, but why was he crucified? Because he pointed out the hypocrisy of the religious elite and the political elite of his day and the money changers, and that's the ones that instigated what was going on. Now, I'm not saying Trump's like Christ and all that stuff, but it's what irks these people is their double standard, their hypocrisy. When it's pointed out, they're not objective. The media is not objective. None of us are objective. All the time. Okay, and they just need to admit that. They have an agenda. Okay, and as all of us, we see things through our eyes, and we interpret things by the experience of our lives. And a lot of times when we report something, we discover later, oh, I was wrong here, and I was wrong there, and I was wrong here. Okay, and the thing is this idea in chapter 9, verse 1, is what our society calls racism. Oh, what's going to... They're going to divorce. They're going to issue a divorce decree in chapter 10 of Jews marrying to Hamites. And they're going to divorce them. And people are going, oh, that's a terrible thing. Terrible, terrible. One of the bus kids last night, she was mad Trump got elected because she wanted Hillary. I said, why'd you want her? Because he's going to kick out all the Mexicans, illegal aliens. And I said, no, he's not. I said, all they got to do is become legal. No problem here. Well, I said, okay, let me ask you, do you want your neighbor to come to your bedroom and live in your house without being asked? How about everybody in Rensselaer go to your house, who's not allowed in your house, and go to your house and just want to go to your bedroom and just sleep in your bed? No, I went like, well, that's what illegal aliens are. Got to explain it to them. Oh. You know, you got to think about it. We're just trying to combat 6 or 7 hours that public school teachers are ramming down these young kids' throats. Okay, and this girl, she's usually the third one that I pick up, and every single Wednesday she says, I want to be last, because she just wants to stay in there and talk to us. So I do the reverse route just so that she's last. Okay, because she just wants to, she enjoys somebody talking to her. Okay, and so in verse 1, for the Jewish people, okay, it was wrong for them to marry outside of first their race and their religion. It was a sin. Okay, it's a sin for them to do that, even though we have several examples of somebody doing that. David married Bathsheba. Obviously, that was all a mess. Okay, Bathsheba was of Hamitic race. Okay, you have Solomon and all his wives. Most of them Hamites. Okay, and so Moses married an Ethiopian woman. So you'll have that. Then you have the Gentile Ruth coming through there. Okay, but as far as the Jewish culture, this is what God expected for them in the New Testament. Okay, there are some different things going on for the New Testament. You can't say it's sin, but you could say it's not the best thing in the world. Okay, when you got two people of the same race getting married, you got two separate families coming together. I mean, that's enough in itself. Then if you got different cultures coming together, boy, you really got to deal with it. Okay, so in chapter 9, verse 1, these are the Canaanites, the Hittites, Perizzites that they booted out of the land of Israel. Why? Mainly because of their satanic leanings. They were big-time spiritism. They were into satanic worship, and it was leading into perverted sexual lives. And you'll see that written out in Leviticus chapter 18. The entire chapter is an X-rated chapter, per se. And this is the doings of Egypt. Okay? And nothing's changed that. I don't care what people say. If you go to Africa, you will see it. You know what African people, boys, are taught in Malawi? How they get a cure for AIDS? You know what their cure for AIDS? What they're taught? Rape a white girl. And so they do it, thinking that that's going to cure them. Okay, and so, you know, is that being taught, you know, told in America what's going on? Are Americans being told that Obama can't take a trip to Africa, many countries, because 21 countries have made sodomy illegal and you can be arrested? He might get arrested if he goes there. Okay, no, they're not going to talk about those things. Okay, why? Because this is a society that's going down the tubes. Okay, so chapter 1, the idea came to Ezra about this. Verse 2. For they have taken of their daughters for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Yea, the hand of the princes and the rulers have been chief in this trespass. Now, okay, that's a Jewish thing. Jewish Old Testament, Jewish religion. Okay, so they're intermingling with a pagan society. And God's opposed to that. Okay, so now this is not just fleshly intermingling. This gets into spirit intermingling, meaning fallen angels and all that stuff. Okay, it really gets out there. So how does Ezra respond to this? Now, here's the thing about Ezra. Okay, a lot of times people would respond in the Nehemiah fashion. The Nehemiah fashion was he went to those people and pulled their own hair out. Now, Ezra, when he heard about it, he broke down personally himself and pulled his own hair out. He was broken by it. Okay? And that's where we need to be for our country. When we see stuff going on in our country, it ought to make us sigh and cry for this nation. You know, I mean, it's a mess. Okay, so verse 3. When I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle. Okay, so he's ripping his clothes. And I plucked off the hair of my head and of my beard and sat down astonied. Okay, so astonied, astonished is a word we use. Okay, the words that the Bible would use on a natural reaction or a reaction that some might have is to sigh or cry. If you would look in Ezekiel chapter 9. Okay, I'm not saying you have to boo-hoo and cry all the time, but there's a sighing where you just say, what's wrong with people? Okay, the blindness that they have. I mean, the absolute blindness where they say these certain things, and they don't have no evidence of these things at all. Ezekiel chapter 9, when the Lord judges a nation, he sends through the watching angels, and then they look for people who are sighing and crying about the abominations of that nation. Meaning, they're concerned. They're truly concerned about what's going on in their country, and they're praying about it. They're not demanding God to bless America. They're saying, God, please have mercy on us. Okay, and verse 4, Ezra 9, verse 4, the Lord said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And to the others he said in mine hearing, go ye after him through the city and smite, and let not your eye spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, and come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. So these were the ones that were truly concerned for the decadence of society and was praying and begging God for mercy. And when he came through, he gave mercy to that crowd. Okay, he mentions that also in Ezekiel 21, I think it's 4. Ezekiel 21, 4. Okay, 21, 4, you have the sword coming through the land. And then 21, 6 says, sigh therefore, thou son of man, with the breaking of thy loins, and with bitterness sigh before their eyes. And this was Ezekiel. Okay, do you remember reading what the Lord did that week or two before the crucifixion? He went up to the Mount of Olives and he'd overlooked the city of Jerusalem. And he'd overlooked the city and he said, oh, my people. And he would sigh and cry over them because they were rejecting him. Okay, and so Ezra, he first and foremost, he felt a sighing and a crying or astonishment because of what the people were doing. In verse 4, he says this, Then were assembled unto me everyone that trembled at the words of the God of Israel because of the transgression of those that had been carried away, and I sat astonied until the evening sacrifice. Okay, what words is he talking about? Well, obviously, the Mosaic Law. He trembled. He feared. Okay, he's read this and this in the Old Testament law. And if this is what God says is going to happen, where are we at? Okay, this idea of trembling at the words of God, if you would look in Isaiah chapter 66. You know, if the Lord would execute absolute judgment on all cases that are death sentences, you know, there'd hardly be anybody around, of people in the Bible. Okay, so we can see in this age, you know, God's mercy is very slow moving. Okay, in the millennial time period, it's going to be fast and swift, as we're going to portray in the play. But in our age, people who commit sin and don't get judged by it, they're thinking, hey, I got away with it. No, they didn't get away with it. It's just that God's mercy is just stretching here. Okay, in Isaiah 66, verse 2, he says, for all those things hath mine hand made, and all these things have been, saith the Lord, but to this man will I look, even to him that is poor of a contrite spirit and trembleth at my word. That was Isaiah, and that was Ezra. They trembled at the words of God. Verse 5, hear ye the word of the Lord, that ye tremble, ye that tremble at his word. Now, when I read through the Bible, the thing that I fear when I read through the Bible is never to add a word, subtract a word, or change it. Because I see, I have witnessed firsthand people who start adding words, subtracting words, changing words, and how goofy they get spiritually speaking. Okay? You know, probably the worst down that road of spiritual reprobate, close to it, is a British Israelite. I got an email from a guy who's trying to be a missionary. Okay? And so, and then I got a second email. He evidently sent his letter to this guy, this dude down in Indiana somewhere. And this guy responded back to him as like, we ain't going to support anybody that's dispensational and blah, 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 and just went on and on and on. So I thought, why did I get this guy's email? And I thought, oh, another entertaining thing. I might just have a little fun with this one. And so I wrote him, the guy, I said, what do you mean by dispensations? And then he wrote a big, long thing. I was impressed how long it was. And so then I started looking at it. And I said, this guy's a British Israelite. He is a hyper-Calvinist British Israelite. He don't believe in the millennium. He don't believe in Daniel's 70th week. He's Israel. And I tell you, when somebody believes that, they are so far out there, they are close to Mars. I've dealt with many of these guys, and you don't get anywhere with them except for entertainment. And here's how you handle them. Okay, if you would look at Romans chapter 11, verse 25. Paul warned the church that if you boast against the branches, Israel, and if you think you become Israel, you're bonkers. Okay, now he didn't use the word bonkers. You can get that out of Greek. Okay, but it says in Proverbs 26, verse 12, it says, seest thou a man wise in his own conceits? There is more hope for a fool. Now, there ain't much hope for a fool, and this guy's worse. So there's two characteristics in Proverbs 26. He thinks he's smart, and he's conceited. Romans 11, 25. Okay, this is a mystery that we are to be faithful stewards of. And he says, for I would not that you should be ignorant. I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits. That's the Proverbs 26, 12 one. That blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. Now this guy says the church is Israel. Okay, so when you read 25, go up to 28, put them all together, you ask him, are you Israel of 25 or 26? And they'll never answer the question. Never will. Because it exposes them. The church is not Israel. Israel is not the church. And when amazingly, this is gaining ground in America. Okay, now Israel, verse 25. Look at all the characteristics of Israel in verse 25, 26, 27, 28. 25, blindness. 25, hey, they're going to be saved. 27, they have a covenant where their sins are taken away. But today, the gospel, verse 28, they're enemies to the gospel. So how can somebody be enemies to the gospel, yet be saved, yet be blind, yet be the church? I mean, it's just absolutely nonsense. And what happens is these guys have failed to study verse 25 to 28 and believe it. Where in verse 28 it says, as concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but as touching the election, they're beloved for the Father's sake. So here, whoever this Israel is, they are elect in one side and enemies in the other. They're blind in another, saved in another. And that's not the church. And that's not Americans. That's Israel. Israel today is an enemy to the gospel. Are they not? Yeah, they are. Just go over there and try it. Israel today is blind concerning the Bible. But yet there is a portion of Israel that's going to accept this covenant by God. Verse 27, the covenant that their sins are taken away, and that will be the completion of Daniel's 70 weeks. I tell you, when you see this, it just makes all this beautiful, perfect sense. But when a guy gets wrapped up that Israel is totally done, it's gone with, it's out there, it's over with, America's the new Israel, these people are nuts. Why? Because they've rejected what God has said. And that's a fear that I have when you start adding a word, changing a word, subtracting a word. I'm thinking, where are you going to start and stop? So never start. You got a question? That's one. That's one. JW is another one. Mormon is another one. Catholic's another one. And a lot of Baptists are getting that way. Okay, this guy's church was, what was it called? It was a Baptist church. Well, he believed in the London Baptist Confessional. Yeah, I mean, elected of God, Satan's been bound, there's no tribulation, there's no millennium, the church is going to usher in this great millennium someday. Boy, aren't we doing a great job? And how can you be out, how far out there? I'm Israel. It's when you start adding and subtracting to the words, and it's on his website, we use the King James Bible. They don't believe it. We use the King James and the Received Text and Ben Gomi, Masoretic Text or something like that. When he got three different authorities, he became his own final authority. And that's a fear we ought to have, a fear of deception. And that's why never add a word to this book, never subtract a word, never change the words. Don't pull it out of context. If you don't understand it, just admit it you don't understand it. There's no shame in saying, I don't know. Okay, there's no shame in saying, God's smarter than I am. If I can't figure it out, it's not his fault, it's mine. But when a guy starts adding words, and that's a fear we ought to have. We ought to fear that, trembling at the words of God. That's the one the Lord looks at and the Lord wants us to look at and be a trembling of the Word of God. And that's where Ezra is at. Ezra chapter 9. Let's see, verse 4. We'll come back to that. Oh, in about a month from now, because we're going to Australia come Monday. So, okay, any prayer requests?